Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 76, and I am Libya, your host. And this week we have returning guests.
Tom from Glendale.
Allison from Tarzana.
Peter from Glendale.
Oh, Glendale is showing up in the house this week. Look at that. All right. So first up, we'll start off with some news. First bit of news is White Collar has been renewed.
Woo-hoo!
And we much rejoicing. Second piece is, I think we reported a couple weeks ago that Suits got renewed, but what just came out is that the showrunner, Sean Jablowski, was cut. And so he's not the showrunner anymore. The creator of the show, Aaron Korsh, is now going to be the showrunner, which I would normally be cool with because he's the creator of the show, except that he's never been a showrunner before. He's been a writer on several other shows, but he's never run a show. So that worries me a little bit, especially considering that this season's been firing on all cylinders. I don't know why they would make the change. You have no comment?
Well, no, it's politics. I mean, if you remember the first season of Carnival, because the creator of that show had no showrunning experience, they brought in Ron Moore to be the showrunner.
And then
Ron Moore's contract was not extended for season two, so which freed him up to do Galactica, but Carnival season two I thought was far inferior to season one. So
right, and so that's basically, now that the show's a hit, they figure that the creator of the show can now be the showrunner, but that does not necessarily prove true. Yeah,
that could be
yeah. All right. Next things we're going to talk about is Katie Sackhoff has been cast as one of the leads of a new A&E show.
Well, they got picked up.
What do you mean by picked up?
They got the pilot is going to series.
Well, I mean, I know that's that's all I was saying. Yeah, the name of the show is called Longmire. It's based off of a series of books, and it's about it's basically a current day Western, and she's playing the deputy.
And Cassidy Freeman, formerly of Smallville, who played Tess, aka Lex's sister. For those people, for those handful that watch Smallville.
Because I was like, who are you talking about? I have no idea who that is.
Oh, her.
Wait, Tess is Lex's sister?
Yes.
I saw her. I didn't see the last season, but when they introduced her, they didn't say she was Lex's sister.
No, that was the secret that was introduced.
The twist.
That was the twist.
Now I know the twist.
You've been spoiled.
Surprise!
It's fine.
So you don't have to watch the show now.
It's over anyway.
All right. Next piece is that Zachary Quinto from Heroes and from Star Trek has been cast in American Horror Story.
Oh.
Which also isn't...
Oh, that's good.
Mrs.
I heard
Coach,
the pilot's good.
Mrs. Coach from Friday Night Lights is in there.
Yeah, Mrs. Coach Taylor is the star. She is the poster.
She
is the poster when you look at that. Zachary Quinto has been cast as a reoccurring town member, because whatever this happens in some special town, and he's one of the people from the town.
So she's not the husband. Zachary Quinto is not her husband? Because I thought it was about a couple.
No, yeah, but there's people that live in the town. And if he was the husband, he would have already been in the pilot. So he just got cast for the series.
Do we know who the husband is? Have you seen anybody big?
I don't know. I haven't seen the pilot, so I don't know.
No, they just started running teaser trailers, and it looks interesting.
Yeah, and they literally, when I looked at the photo for the show, it just had, who's the woman who plays
her?
Connie Britton. They just had a picture of her for the cover. The last piece of casting news is that Richard Dean Anderson has been signed on a 5-episode arc for Raising Hope.
Oh, that'll be fun.
He does comedy really well.
Yes, he does.
So and Raising Hope is one of those comedies that I never really gave a chance to. Like, it would come on, I would catch like the first 2 minutes of it when I would record whatever came before it, and I'd watch it and I think it's hilarious, but then I'd never actually add it to my TiVo.
It was the only fall show from last year I liked on the networks.
And it's actually, I have to say, it is funny. I just never actually recorded it, so because of that, I'll probably watch his episodes because I love Richard.
It's also the only fall show from ABC, NBC, or Fox that got picked up for the season.
All right, I was looking at the list of all the fall shows. There's like 30 new shows, and I was like, canceled in two, canceled in one. Like I'm like, I want to do a lottery where we predict how quickly these new shows get canceled. We totally need to do that.
That's funny.
We just need to do that amongst ourselves.
That'll be our September special.
Yeah, yeah. And do our predictions. Once all these shows, because in about 2 weeks, all these shows are going to be finaling out. So that's actually a pretty good idea. Before we get into the show, oh, you have news?
I have three pieces of news. Number one, Doctor Who, Stephen Moffat came out and said, despite all the rumors you've heard, next season will be a full season, although we might be starting later than we did this year.
Okay, wait, does that mean that Sherlock is only going to be three episodes then?
Probably.
Oh, boo. I would have taken...
That's standard, though. He's pretty much committed himself to just three.
I know, but he was like, I'm taking the year off so that I can work on Sherlock. So I thought that meant that Sherlock was going to be longer.
Whismajigger is in the Hobbit movie, so you
can't... I know. Actually, both of them are in the Hobbit.
Oh, so you can't... Yeah, you can't do
it. Their time's kind of locked up.
Yeah. News piece number two... Breaking In got a 13-episode mid-season pickup.
Which is so bizarre. The show was, like, officially canceled. Like, it was canceled.
It has happened before.
It's still bizarre. I think it's still bizarre because the show didn't get really great ratings. I mean, I thought it was funny. I liked it, but not enough to talk about on the show. But, you know,
we'll
see. Right.
They kind of buried it. I mean,
yeah, well, yeah.
And news item number three, second season of, the space drama that we... Falling Skies. They just signed Dr. Kevin Grazier, formerly of Battlestar Galactica and Eureka, as technical advisor, to be the technical advisor.
Okay, because I was going, who the heck is that? Okay.
So, with Battlestar writers and the tech advisor, hopefully the show will be much better season two than season one.
One other thing that I wanted to talk about, honorable mention, I guess, is that I started watching the show Strike Back.
It's good.
Did you watch the British version first, or did you start on the Cinemax version?
There's a difference.
There is. What's weird is season one was on the BBC, so it's a British show.
Mm-hmm.
And then season two got picked up by Cinemax. So did you start watching it on Cinemax?
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing that's what's so bizarre is because I went to go look for it, and it was like season one is a British show. And I was like, so I was looking for the season one of the Cinemax version. And I didn't see it, and then I realized that was actually season two. So
we're watching season two.
Right. And so I went back and I watched season one, and spoiler alert, everyone from season one dies or is gone. Like the guy in season one that they're supposed to go rescue, mm-hmm. and he's got all this information, and he's sitting there, and he's like, my name is Porter, and they got a gun. That's the star of season one.
I don't think we're done with him on season...
They blew his head off.
But his name's still in the credits.
I know, but they put a bullet in his head, so I'm thinking he's dead.
It could have been fake.
I don't think so. They showed
either that or he has a really good agent to get top.
I did notice his name is still in the credits, which I thought was weird. I was like, maybe they're going to do flashbacks.
That's Richard Armitage.
Right. So that's so bizarre. I was like, okay, he was a star of season one, and we kill him in the first episode of season two? Like, what?
I like the review on... What the review says, it's kind of like 24 if Jack Bauer had stopped to get laid every hour.
Well, that's true. Because the difference between season one of Strike Back and season two is season two, because it's on Cinemax, for no apparent reason, everyone just has sex. And I was just like, wait, why? You're running from the bad guys, but you're going to stop to have sex with this hooker. Okay, what? You know, it's really...
Because it's on Skinemax.
Oh, I know, and that kind of breaks me out of the show because that reminds me that I'm on watching Cinemax show, you know? So I really like season one. You should definitely go back and watch season one.
Where are you getting season one from?
No comment. From my friends in England. My friends in England are very generous.
Oh.
Okay, anyway. And the other honorable mention is that I am almost caught up with Breaking Bad, as you are, Peter, correct?
Yeah, it's freaking awesome.
Hopefully by next week, we can start talking about Breaking Bad. It's phenomenal.
We can say, bitch. Yeah, it's freaking awesome. I'm going to watch probably, does it air on Sundays?
Yes, it does. Yes. It airs tonight.
Okay, so basically, I just have to watch the last week's and tonight's. Yeah, so I'll be ready for next week.
So you only got two left. I have probably four left, but you know me, I'll crank through that in a minute.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's awesome. I can't wait to talk
about it. So looking forward to Breaking Bad discussion next week. So if you guys, do you watch Breaking Bad, Tom? No? You should. That's all I'm going to say. All right. Now on to the shows, and since I was in Blue Hawaii... last week. We're a couple weeks behind. We're not going to really try to catch up on every show, but there are a couple of shows that I feel like we need to talk about the last two shows. First up being True Blood. So we have two episodes to discuss, and we'll try to get through them very quickly. Who wants to start us off?
I have liked this season of True Blood more than the previous seasons. I still think one is my favorite.
It is.
But this was like, the last two have been pretty entertaining. I was really curious to see what was going to happen with, because you know, some of you have read the books, but I was very curious to see about how this whole Eric thing is going to go down.
Right.
Because in the second episode, it looks like, well, in the first episode, it seems like Eric is under the spell of, wait, what's the witch's name?
Well, we've got two.
You've got Marnie in the present.
And Antonia is the one.
Antonia!
Right. The actress is Fiona Shaw. But yes, the olden time is Antonia. But it feels like, so she gets him, and then in the second episode, she can control him, but there's a moment when Suki sees him, and he's clearly aware of it, because he's like, oh, you need to leave now. So I was like, okay, so it's not like he can't talk and stuff. It's just that he is technically under her spell, right?
Right, right. He doesn't want to hurt Suki, so he wants her to get out of there.
I've been enjoying it, and then it all kind of escalates to looks like a big, you know,
confrontation. Yeah.
Confrontation between the witches, the vampires, and then I guess the werewolves too.
Well, I think they're the wild card.
Yeah, you don't know which way they're gonna swing. But I have to say, the witch storyline for True Blood is definitely the best of everything that's going on.
Yeah.
Everything, but all the other side stories are like, blah.
Let me just say that I have never been a fan of the demon baby storyline.
Right.
And the resolution of that, it's like, when did True Blood become the Ghost Whisperer?
Yeah.
So that's, I'm glad that that's done with.
Me too.
I didn't like the way that the first of the episodes we watched ended, because you know they're not going to kill Suki.
Right.
However, I did think how when they came back to that storyline, I did like how they got into it, and then they got to the whole Eric Suki thing and whatever. So,
well, I like the whole, we're going to have a truce and discussion in the graveyard, and we're meeting in neutral territory. We're going to talk this through. And I like the fact that Antonia was basically, she not only lied to the vampire, she also lied to her own coven.
People.
Yeah, because and now she's holding them all prisoner, so I like how that's flipped, because you kind of have sympathy for Antonia for most of this season, because you think that, yeah, she's justified to want to, you know, fight the vampires, but now
she's evil.
Now she's definitely moved herself into the evil big bad category, because she's holding all these humans hostages to use their power to power herself, basically. She's using them as batteries, I guess. And so that's really kind of interesting. And I have to give points to Tara for...
Yeah, that was my favorite.
Just standing up to her, knowing that Suki can read her mind. She's like, okay, Suki, read my mind. This is, okay, let's go. Let's just, like, know what I'm thinking.
Yeah, she gives her an audio cue, and I forgot what it is. But she says something so that clearly Suki should go, oh, I should read her mind.
Right.
That was pretty good.
Right.
I like that.
Yeah,
and the thing is, I'm finding this season to be wildly uneven. There are certain things that I've liked about it, and then other things that it started out good, and then they just lost me. Like, I happen to like the trash baby. I thought that really started out well, because as far as I'm concerned, you know, possessed dolls, you're just going to get my attention with that, because there's nothing creepier than possessed doll stories. That's just, you've got a winning combination there. But then it turned immediately from a possessed doll story, you know, evil possessed doll, to just, you know, a sad ghost story.
Yeah.
And as soon as it made that little U-turn, I just lost interest completely.
No, totally. I was totally hoping for the possessed doll thing too.
Yeah, because creepy and fun then,
yeah,
you know,
totally.
And then it just got sappy and stupid and tear-jerking.
Although I will say, I did like two moments that made me laugh, because, you know, I do like the humor that True Blood has. I liked when they finally exorcised the spirit from Lafayette, and she says something like, oh, I don't know, thank you. And he says something like, you know, whatever, bitch.
Oh, back just, at you, bitch.
Yeah, back at you, bitch. It's like, oh, that's kind of funny. Like, because it's just Lafayette. And I also liked when Hoyt is packing up Jessica's stuff, and it's like, for you, monster. Like,
yeah. When it was written on the boxes.
Yeah, yeah.
Hoyt has been completely channeling his mother through the entire breakup. He really has.
Right, which actually I don't really love, but I liked that moment. I liked the for you, monster. I thought that was kind of funny, but...
I didn't think it was funny. I just thought it was mean and kind of out of character. Because I think a couple weeks ago you mentioned that you thought that the way Hoyt is behaving towards Jessica has been out of character.
Yes, I do. You know what it is?
Remind you that, you know, he was raised by his mom.
He was. I think what it is it's just that it's a handwritten thing. I just think it's funny. You know, I agree.
I like that Jason scrawled it out, though.
Yeah, that's right.
That was a very Jason touch.
I thought he was going to... I figured he would just put it in another box, but it makes more sense as a viewer. If you put it in another box, it's not as funny. So I was like, oh, yeah. It's easier to just show that he scratched it out or something.
Yeah, and it's very Jason.
And them having sex was just like, oh, really? Because that's not going to end well.
Oh, of course
no,
not.
I knew that was going to happen, but I will say, though, I'll take that over the, like, I was just saying how much I do like the humor of True Blood, but the whole, like, goofy, bad soap opera, and I know they're doing it deliberately, but that whole scene where Suki has this dream.
Oh, the menage.
It's just so, I was like, I get, like, there are really trashy, silly things about True Blood I like. But like this, I was like, oh, come on.
But
like
that was how to make a sex scene unsexy.
Yes, exactly.
Let's have a sex scene where all we do is sit around and talk.
And it was weird. It was strange to me how Anna Paquin, now I definitely don't think like she looked bad in her negligee, but the moment they, because basically, you know, they're kissing and then they're both biting her, you know, and then she wakes up. And she wakes up and she's fully clothed. I thought she was way sexier that way than she was in her cheap Victoria's Secret outfit.
What I was going to say, the thing that actually threw me out of that scene is I became uncomfortable because I was like, isn't Anna Paquin and the guy that plays Bill married?
Yep.
And then they're having the sex with the other guy? I was like,
never forget that kind of stuff.
Oh, but it threw me out of the moment because I'm thinking, well, that's an awkward scene. You know? So that just...
What were they doing while they were shooting that?
I don't know.
Hopefully they were laughing. I'm hoping that they all get along and they were...
Yeah, I'm hoping too, but I felt awkward for them, which is why I hate when my television couples get together. That bothers me a lot, but that's beside the point.
Aside from the fact that it usually kills the show.
It usually kills the show.
It's even weirder with Dexter and his sister, and now they're divorced.
Thank you for reminding me of that. Oh, by the way, yeah, Dexter is coming up soon. Yay! Yeah. All right, let's move on. I think... True Blood, semi-thumb up,
sideways. No, I like them both.
These were the better episodes of this season.
I would say some down for others. You know?
Yeah, and next week looks fine. Like, basically, you know, Bill, at the end of this episode, Bill is doing his Vampire League thing, and then the witches come with the, you know, this coup d'etat with the vampires, and yeah, it looks like next week is going
to
be crazy. So, it looks fun.
What's Alcide's girlfriend up to? That's what I want to know.
She was trying to kill Suki.
Yeah, but she's playing the middle like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, she was trying to kill Suki she knew that Suki could read her mind, so she thought positive thoughts when she knew that Suki was reading her mind, but her entire point was to get Suki killed.
Right, yeah, I thought that, for the one moment, when Suki gets back in the pickup, I was like, wait a minute, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe she is helping her out. Because Suki's all just like, hey, man, I thought you were going to leave me. But I was like, all right, maybe I misread this situation.
No, she was trying to get her killed.
I'm just over some of the same. They've been dealing with that little thing for a while.
Right. In the book, Suki already had to kill her. So that storyline should be over.
Yeah, that's...
Oh, yeah. I know. Okay, we're moving on. Next show we want to talk about is The Closer. And this week's episode was one of the more serious ones, which was dealing with a cop from out of town comes in, is like, my daughter has been murdered and I want your help to solve it or whatever. And as a courtesy, Major Crimes takes a look at the case. And what's really kind of interesting is everyone assumes, or all the other cops assumes, that her daughter's just a prostitute who OD'd on some drugs and nobody really looked any further. But what's interesting is that, you know, once the cops actually put some effort into looking at the case, it became much bigger.
Right.
And I thought that was really interesting and really good. And I like the woman who came in. I don't know the actress's name.
No, but it made me wonder if, because we know that after The Closer, they're going to do a show called Major Crimes, that character, that actress, I actually wouldn't mind if she joined the cast for the new show.
Right. Yeah, she was good.
But yeah, no, it was good. I mean, I've always gone on record of saying I'm more of a fan of The Closer when it's fun, when we're hanging out with Provenza and Flynn. But this one was a pretty good one. Like, I thought the case was good. I thought the tone felt right. Like, it was good. I actually got kind of emotionally wrapped up and everything. So I thought it was a good episode.
One of the best scenes, though, for me was Sanchez, after he gave his interview with Captain Rader, and he goes and he talks to Brenda in the hallway.
Oh, that was great.
Yeah, oh, that was really intense and interesting, because he was like, no, we didn't do the wrong thing. Don't think we did the wrong thing. And then he says something about basically that no matter what they did, because he was a Crip, no matter how they sent him home, he was still going to be dead. It was just right. A matter of, is he going to be dead in 5 minutes or is he going to be dead in an hour? It was like there was nothing they could have done to stop that from happening if he wouldn't accept police protection. Or renege on his story or whatever. And so he's like, I don't lose a day of sleep or whatever over it. And that was pretty good. And then at the end, you find out that the reason there's the lawsuit is because somebody in that car talked.
Right.
To me, that only says Gabriel. Gabriel's the only one who would have talked in that car, because it was Brenda, Gabriel, and Sanchez. Is that right? I think those are the only three people who were in the car. And Brenda knows she didn't tell anybody, and Sanchez didn't tell anybody. You could tell by the way, you know, what his statement. And Gabriel has betrayed her several times. When he thinks that he's on the moral high ground, he's totally gone behind her back before. So my money's on Gabriel.
I think you're right. Or it's either Gabriel or it's some other thing that isn't one of the characters, which I don't know what it would be, but I don't think it's Sanchez or anything.
Well, I mean, I really do. One, also, Gabriel didn't get an affidavit. Like, he didn't get sued. Remember? He had to go ask for them to sue him.
Right.
So, yeah, I think it's him. I think he's the turncoat, which is sad because I like Gabriel, but his fatal flaw is that when he thinks he's morally right, everyone else has to be wrong. So, anyway, good episode. Any other comment, Peter?
No, but it was good. Yeah, totally.
All right.
I agree.
Next up is Eureka. And this week's episode was Tiny, the big machine astronaut thing that they sent to Mars. Was it Mars? No, it's Titan.
Titan.
Yeah, they sent the machine to Titan. They bring it back on the faster-than-light speed thing, and it immediately blows up. And, you know, they have to figure out what's the deal, whatever. But the main thing is all about the relationships. So that's really the crux of the episode. And they bring in the guy from Princess Bride.
Wallace Shawn. Inconceivable.
He is fantastic. Oh, man. He's really he makes me laugh just by him walking in the room. He doesn't even have to say anything. But what was the heart-wrenching thing is after he does the whole he's evaluating Sheriff Carter and
Allison's
relationship. And at first you think he wants to see if it's just a trivial relationship, that they're not really serious, then that's going to be a problem. But then so they're trying to prove to him that they're actually a real couple. And then, ironically, once they prove that they're an actual real couple, they're like, oh, well, you have to break up because that's a conflict.
So they do too good a job, basically.
Right. So they said either one of you has to quit your jobs or you have to end your relationship. And I was like, I can see the thing that frustrates me about this is part of it feels like it's an obstacle that they put in the story to break them up.
Yep.
The other thing that bothers me is like, if they had known ahead of time that they weren't allowed to be in a relationship. Because, first of all, nobody had a problem with Allison marrying, what's his name?
Nathan.
Nathan. She got married to Nathan, and he was the head of GD, and she was like the second in command of GD, and they had no problem with them getting married and having a kid. Okay? So now all of a sudden, this guy's like, oh, well, it's a problem, so you guys can't be in a relationship. And I call BS on that, because you either say ahead of time you can't be in a relationship because of these rules. You cannot come back after the fact and be like...
In season four.
Right, and then be like, now you have to split up. And then you've got... what's his name?
Henry
and his wife are together, and you've got Joe and Zane together, and you've got all... You've got... Fargo and his girlfriend. Like, you've got all these people pairing off, and now you're going to tell me this particular couple can't be together. I call BS on that, and I really don't like it. So,
I'm sure it won't last for more than an episode. It's just, you know, this week's little thing.
I really feel like that's the big obstacle that they're putting in front of them this season. I really do. That's how they end the episode. They tell them they cannot be together. Episode ends. So that's not just going to be a one episode thing. That's going to be their conflict for the season, and I feel that's cheap. So,
how much of this season is left, though?
Yeah,
I don't think that they have that many episodes.
I think they're just
about
done.
Yeah, they're almost done with season four, but then you got all of season five. So my thing is, I like them together. I've been waiting for them to be a couple for this
since
season one, and you finally get them together, and they actually function as a good couple, and it doesn't take away from the show. And it's fine. It doesn't bother, because sometimes when you get the couple together, it messes up the show.
Yep.
But I thought they did a really good job of having them be a couple.
No, that's one of the things I like about it. They actually do a fantastic job of writing them as a very mature couple.
Right.
You know, they're very adult, which I like.
I like the several episodes back where Allison would actually switch between calling him Carter and Jack
right.
based on what role she was fulfilling.
Exactly.
Right, and so it
totally... very professional.
Right, and it works. So by them bringing this in to break them up artificially just ticks me off.
I'm sure it'll be... they'll file an appeal or...
Yeah, I see that happening.
Somehow I think that...
Well, they better, or else I'm writing my congressman an angry letter.
Well, considering the show's basically dead.
Well, they would
aside from the fact that we have this season and
all of
last
next season, and they're already written, but that's fine. I'm still going to be mad.
They're already shot.
I know. So that's what I'm saying. I'm writing my letter to my congressman, because there's no reason to write the letter to the writers because they're done.
They're moving on.
Anyway.
But it was a fun episode.
It was. Other than that.
Other than saying goodbye to Tiny. That was brief, you know.
Alas, poor Tiny.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, I mean, there was thumbs up for Eureka except me being bitter. So there's that. next up, I want to talk about an episode of The Alphas. But it's from last week and not from this week. It was Bill and Gary's Excellent Adventure. And we haven't talked about Alphas in weeks, mainly because I didn't really necessarily think it was worthy of discussion. However, this episode was fantastic. It was just...
This was from 2 weeks ago, not the most recent episode.
Yes, that's it. It was 2 weeks ago.
Yes, right.
What made it so good?
It was basically Bill, who is... the FBI agent, he thinks of himself as a professional and everybody else is amateurs, and he tells them that all the time, that they really don't know what they're doing. Yet in this episode, he's the one who makes all the mistakes. He makes every amateur mistake, because if he feels like if he can solve this particular case, he can get back on the FBI, which ends up being a correct assumption because it's a huge profile case, and he drags Gary along with him because he knows that Gary has a skill that nobody else in the FBI has, and he can help him solve the case. So he pretty much kind of kidnaps Gary. Like, nobody knows where he and Gary are for, like, the whole episode. And they go and they try to save this girl who's been kidnapped. And Gary's 100% behind it, because he's like, oh, because he could see the girl and her being scared. And so he was like, we have to save her because she's scared. We have to save, you know, that's his whole thing. So, and then I think Malik Yoba promises him that
he'll
let him drive. Yes.
He'll let him drive.
Yeah, because that's the whole thing. Every episode, Gary's like, can I drive? There's no. Can I drive? No. Like, that's been the discussion for every episode up until this one. And so Bill's like, if you help me solve this case, I'll let you drive. And they actually show at the end he does let him drive, which is hilarious. But
it's a very bad decision.
Yeah, it really is. But what's good about this episode is that it shows how Bill's decision-making got compromised by his own ambition, and his recklessness actually got Gary hurt. And not as hurt as you initially think, but still, because they fake you out and make you think Gary got shot, but he actually didn't get shot. He got pretty badly bruised up, though. So, and he keeps Gary up and out for like 2 days. Like, it's crazy. And considering the fact that he pretty much stays at home with his mom and he has to be in bed at a certain time, it's insanity.
Well, he has all the weird tics and obsessions and mannerisms of an autistic.
Right.
I mean, that's what he is. And they play that, you know, for all it's worth, which is great. That's the one thing that I really like about the show, is that they're true to that with Gary. And so, and he needs all those rituals and you know, obsessions that an autistic clings to get through a day.
Right.
And so all the things that have to be just so.
Right.
He goes through, and so to suddenly be ripped from that and be taken from his rituals, you know, from his daily routine, that's a big thing for him. That's huge.
Exactly, which is why it was so irresponsible of Bill to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes you think a lot less of Bill because of that. And so that was a really good character episode, and I really liked it. I thought it was one of the best episodes they've done on the Alphas, and interestingly enough, it really just focused on two characters. And granted, some of the other characters were sleeping around and doing other stuff, which I didn't care about. I don't care if what's his name and what's her name. I don't even know their names. I don't care if they sleep together. I don't care if they don't sleep together. At all.
See, that's a fault of the show, is that unfortunately, really, the most interesting character on the show so far is Gary.
Yes, by far.
So, yeah,
and the other characters really suffer from the fact that they have not done anything nearly as interesting
right.
with them, or developed their characters in nearly as three-dimensional a way.
Well, I think the doctor's interesting.
Yeah, well, they have David Strathairn playing him. He's gold. The things I tend to wonder sometimes if his character would be as interesting if they had a less fantastic actor playing him. Because really, Strathairn is just so fantastic. He humanizes that character so much.
Well,
his reading and the way he performs that, you know.
I like his conflict. I feel he has a conflict of interest, whether he's evil or good, or I'm not sure, but I find that's
interesting. Well, there is a gray area there, certainly, but I think there's a lot to be said about the way he performs him.
I'll give you that. All right.
I really think they leave the other characters just kind of floating without developing them or doing much.
Well, I think they did a lot for Malik Yoba's character with the Gary.
Yeah, but I think that comes as a process of being with Gary. You know, it rubbed off on him. They gave him more to do, you know, by virtue of being with him.
Yeah, but
I thought it was one of their stronger episodes, definitely.
All right, let's move on. Next, we'll talk about Burn Notice. And this week's episode, they have two storylines, and one is they're supposed to be a really simple security job with Jesse, which of course is not a really simple security job with Jesse. And then the other one is they're supposed to fix this computer that's been blown up or whatever. And my only foul that I call in this episode is that once it becomes a hostage situation and the mom is taken hostage, and Jesse is the only link they have to the outside, at that point you call Fiona and Sam and say, hey, I need some backup. You know, like, that is the situation where you would break up the whole two-story thing. And I thought that was crazily irresponsible for them not to do that. So
my favorite line in the entire episode is when Madeline goes to the black woman who's the hostage and says, do you have any tranquilizers in your purse? How did you know? You seem like the type.
Yeah, she was. That woman was so hyper. That was great. Guest star is the guy from The Pretender. What is that man's name?
Michael B. Weiss.
Michael T. Weiss.
T. Weiss. T. Weiss. And wow, he didn't age that well.
I was going to say. He
didn't. No. And I used to think that man was gorgeous. And now I'm like, it's sort of sad. But and his character was very
one note
bad guy. He was like a very simple, very obvious bad guy. I didn't find him particularly menacing. And of course, Peter, you were talking about this, I think, the week before, where you were talking about your tired of Burn Notice, where the bad guy don't believe Michael yet. He gives him the story, and then they go, oh, I guess I believe you, and then they're going to shoot him, and then they don't.
And this one played that the whole time.
Oh, man.
Not only that, but it also seems that we always get at least one episode a season where it's either, you know, they're in an office, and then some people take hostages, and then Michael is stuck there, or they're at a bank, or, you know, which was what this was. I was like, and this, as soon as that happened, I was like, oh, this is going to be the whole episode.
Yes, yes.
So, but I still enjoyed it, because I like the characters and stuff, but I mean, yeah, it wasn't
one of their best, and though I did like that they included Madeline in there, but at that point, I'd have been like, you need to stop including Madeline, because she almost got killed.
Yeah,
that's true.
It was like, it'll be simple. All you need to do is sit out in the car and take pictures. I was like, Jesse, you're fired. You know.
Did I noticed when I paused to do something that on their talkbacks they get the tweets or whatever on their website that one of the fans has theorized that Michael's father is the one who got him burned.
Oh. Huh. They're building to something.
They're building to something major with Michael's father. I don't know if I'd go that far, but
we don't know anything about his father. We don't know what his father used to do at all.
All we know that his father was abusive.
Right, and that's it.
And that he abandoned them.
Yes.
Which they were like, no big loss. But
we don't know professionally what he did.
That is correct. So I'll be interested to see. This season especially, it seems like they've been advancing the arc story in drips and drabs. And I kind of wish, can you move it a little faster?
Right.
Because, you know, especially once Max got killed.
Right.
You know, the part about having to cover his tracks, that got you a couple episodes in. But the rest of the investigation's moving it like a snail. It's almost like we're waiting for the FBI woman to catch up to Michael. And then it becomes a crisis and we're going to have a full episode.
Right. Which appears to be next week's, pretty much.
Yeah.
So, and I think we only have, what, two more episodes or something like that before the break?
That sounds right.
I think that's what they said. They made some announcement. But anyway, Burn Notice was eh. It's all right.
Suits.
Next up, we're going to talk about the last two episodes of Suits, because I think both of them are worthy of discussion. The first one was, I just said what the first one.
It's the one where Eric Close from Without a Trace is this big hotshot lawyer that is getting ready for a showdown with Harvey for class actions
lawsuit, which was actually really good because it's basically Harvey had to battle himself. He basically had to fight a lawyer who thought just like him and was as good as he was, and he had never had to do that before. And what was interesting is Michael's suggestion is like, well, don't think like yourself. Think of something the opposite of what you would do and then do that. Which ended up being really an interesting decision. I thought that was pretty cool. And then Michael's storyline was
protecting Rachel.
Rachel got railroaded and fired from the company for something that somebody else did, and nobody actually tried to figure out if she did it or not, except Mike. And Michael actually followed the evidence and figured out that it was some other guy that did it.
See, when they do episodes like that, it would be helpful, especially on a show like Suits. Let us see those people the episode before it turns out that they're a traitor.
Because it was obviously, it was like, oh, it was the guy that we've never seen before.
That's the difference between Smallville and Buffy. On Buffy, when Jonathan goes crazy, or when Jonathan becomes, you know, part of the terrible trio, we've seen him several seasons before.
Right.
So it's not a big surprise. On Smallville, when you meet the kid, he's the crypto freak of the week.
Right. And this week it was like,
some black kid we've never seen at the law firm.
Right. Oh, it must be him. And, obviously not Rachel, because we know her. Though I do like that Rachel totally made Lewis crawl to get her back.
Yeah.
That was pretty good. That was pretty good.
Again, I like the way that the three women on the show, I want more Donna, by the way.
Donna's fantastic.
But I like the fact that yes, it is kind of a man's world, but we have a woman boss, we have a woman executive assistant, and we have a woman
paralegal,
and all of them, they're not just token female characters.
Yeah.
They all have definitive strengths.
And power, too.
And power.
Yeah. They might not have the job title, but Harvey's afraid of Donna. He should be. He's not going to
cross. Donna knows where all the bodies are buried.
That's true. Does Donna know about... She doesn't know about Mike.
No.
She doesn't know that.
No.
So that was all... That was all pretty good. And then the episode this week was...
I thought the actress was Andrea Parker from The Pretender, but
she
I
was
okay. So it's like Pretender Night in USA.
Yeah, she was.
But basically, she the they're supposed to fire the John Billingsley from.
Oh my God, those episodes were back to back, weren't they?
Yeah, they were back to back.
I just realized it was like it was Pretender Night.
They're supposed to fire this accountant from who's played by the doctor from Enterprise, John Billingsley.
He was really good as the accountant.
He's really good. Period. I mean. A lot of the Star Trek actors get on other shows and we find out, hey, you can't act underneath all that latex. I'm kind of tired of them going to the same well of Mike being discovered, though. It's like, wasn't the whole purpose of the episode of him having a fake transcript and a fake diploma? Isn't that so we can't hold this over his head and yet...
I would think so, except that he kind of set himself up for by going to that party.
True.
Like, true. I was like, dude, why... And now he said it. He was like... I shouldn't go to the party because pretending at work that I'm from Harvard is bad enough, let alone going to a Harvard alumni party and pretending that there is like, obviously that's going to be a problem, which it was because nobody in his class recognized him. But the whole conflicts of the, well, they had the two conflicts. Lewis did what Lewis does, which is he realized that Mike had a girlfriend, and he also realized that Mike had some chemistry with Rachel, and so he totally blows Mike's cover.
Oh, man, that I'm yelling at my TV. Blank move, Lewis.
It was. It was. But Lewis screwed up his situation with a girl, because Lewis gets a girlfriend, which lasts apparently 5 minutes, because he says something to her. We don't know what it was he said to her.
We just see the tape.
We just see the tape, which is hilarious.
And all the associates are looking at the tape on Mike's computer.
Right, so then Mike gets caught by Lewis looking at the tape. So.
And he of course, assumes that it's all Mike's fault.
Right, all that, and so that's why he totally screws Mike over, which I get, but Lewis is still a jerk. But the Harvey... I still like Harvey and Gina Torres' relationship because Harvey's like, look, I need to figure out what this is because this is something bigger than you're thinking, so I need to investigate. And she's like, well, Andrea Parker's character is mine. She's like, she's my friend. They're our client. We shouldn't investigate him. Investigate her. So I'm explicitly telling you not to look into this. Right. I'm giving you a direct order not to do it. And Harvey's like, yes, you have now given me a direct order not to do it, and I shall not do it at all. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Is this the opportunity to say again how fine Gina Torres is looking these days? Okay, we've got that out of the way.
She's great on this
but
show.
But I love
wow.
the scene where they've discovered that where she reads her so-called friend, the Riot Act.
Oh,
because
right.
Because she discovered that private vacation on her island hideaway that she was paid for with money she embezzled from her company.
Right.
Woo!
She was hot. She
was, it
was
like hell hath no fury. Like,
yeah, she's like, you stole all that money from my company to buy that house that you had the audacity to bring me to?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was pretty good. So, yeah, Suits, both episodes, really, really good episodes. And they, I think they only have two or three episodes
left. I think it's
left.
Two left.
Yeah, so thumbs up. I'm not quite sure what they're going to do for their mid-season finale.
Is this mid-season
or
is this
a finale?
Is this season finale?
I don't know.
Because I think this is going to be 13 for them.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure what they're going to do for their finale, but I don't think they knew when they shot it that they were going to have a new season. So I'm assuming it's not going to be a cliffhanger. At least I hope not.
I'm sure there'll be some kind of cliffhanger.
All right. Moving on. Next, we're going to talk about the last two episodes of Torchwood. And the first one was the flashback episode, which was all... It was half flashback and half current day. So, in the flashback, we got to see how Jack met... What is it, Alonzo?
Angelo.
I was going to say Alonzo. So, Jack met Angelo, and in the current day, he's being kidnapped by Gwen. Go.
All I can say is
it was a huge improvement over the previous few episodes that we'd gotten. Things happened, the story moved forward. My feelings about it though is that we should have gotten so much of this information like in episode three, not in episode seven.
Right.
And it also, it just felt like I was watching a different show. I mean, with all literally everything that had been built up over the six episodes prior to that was just dumped and forgotten about. I mean, we just didn't have anything to do with all the characters that had been built up prior and all the storylines that had been built up prior. There was nothing about, you know, the pedophile and all the stuff happening to him, and you know, all of that was forgotten. And instead, we're back in 1928, and we've got all of this flashback stuff going, which was very interesting and all of that, but it felt like another show. It's like all of this is nice, but it just came out of left field. And if this is where the show is, if this is where all the content is, this is all the interesting stuff. Why have I been watching all the other things for six episodes? Why wasn't I watching this earlier?
If there's to be a season five of Torchwood, they need to either do a five-episode miniseries like Children of Earth, mm-hmm. or they need to do basically standalones, maybe a couple of episodes, maybe a multi-parter. But they did not have 10 episodes worth of story. It's 24
That's
syndrome.
It.
And they're falling into the same pitfalls as 24. You have a mole in CTU.
Oh, the mole.
You have family problems that bring you out, that take you out of the main story and cause you to make stupid mistakes.
Right.
And well, please, for the love of God, stop sending Gwyn back to England.
Oh my God.
If one member of the team goes to England, everybody should go to England. Because
right.
it's not Torchwood if they're separated.
I agree.
And it's
yeah,
just...
I agree.
And on behalf of Libya, that music for the romance of Jack and Angelo... seriously, what is this... Lifetime? It was cheesy and unbecoming.
What's funny is me and Tom watched that episode together, and like every 5 minutes I was like, stop the music! I hate it! Hit it on mute! Like, I was hating that music so much.
That was pretty bad.
It did feel like, I was like, who scored this? Did they just get this from like, you know what it felt like? It felt like they got that from, you know, you get your free music databases and you go and find.
Music library.
Yeah, you get a music library and you go, oh, let's find something a little Latin. And then you play.
20th century Latin.
It wouldn't have been so bad if they didn't have it turned up so high too. So that was,
and
that's a small thing compared to everything else. That was small, but it.
And usually when you're running the music that high, like a John Williams score in a Spielberg movie, it means something's not working on screen, and you're blaring the soundtrack to cover the lack of chemistry on screen.
And that was the other problem I had, is I didn't believe that Jack was in love with that guy. Like, there was something...
Well, it was just a wee bit forced.
It was too forced. It was too, because they have like the scene where they run into each other and Jack is laying on top of the guy. And I was like, really? You guys are having a moment now? The police are chasing you? Like, that was just weird. And so I didn't really buy their relationship. Also, I thought Jack could do better. That was my that was my other thought. I was like, Jack can do better than this guy. He's not that good looking. But... Finally, then, you know, they do the relationship, and once they actually are kind of doing Torchwood stuff, and he tells the guy, you could be my companion, which was sort of a creepy doctor reference, I was like, I'm not sure if I think that's cute or creepy, but I like, once they got to where that dude's like his companion, and they're doing these adventures together, and then Jack gets shot, and then he gets... You know, it's like that actually, once that part of the story happens, it feels like it's moving more. And yeah, I was into the story more, but like at the beginning, I'd say the first half of the flashback, I was kind of bored, but because I wanted to get back to what Gwyn and Jack were saying in that car, because their discussion in the car was fantastic. Like some of the things they were saying to each other was like, wow, you guys have been holding on to that for years, you know? So, like...
Well, she's been holding on.
Yeah, she... So, some of that discussion was really good, and, like, when Jack's talking about, oh, I can track your baby using your blood, just pull over, let me use my my device, and I can figure it out, and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, is he lying to her? And then she's like, are you lying to me? And I was like, oh, that's great! But... Yeah, so I'd say the first half of the episode, I was more into the current day stuff. And then the second half of the episode, I thought the flashback stuff got more interesting. Other comments about the first part before we go into the second
part?
Peter,
you've been kind of quiet.
Oh, never mind.
I just, yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, I think Allison brought up some good points that overall these last two episodes, on the one end, they are moving the story forward.
Finally.
And you do... Hello?
He said finally.
Finally.
Oh, yeah, yeah, finally. But I guess, unfortunately for me, I think it's just, I think it's too little too late. I do think that while I wouldn't say the episodes are terrible or anything, I don't know. I just don't really care anymore. I think that it took so long for them to get to these that I'm just kind of, I'm very much just like, okay, we got two more. Let's just wrap this up. Like, you know, so, which is sad because the premiere, I really liked the premise, you know. I was really like, oh, this is a great idea and everything. And it's just kind of taking the wind out of my sails overall. But I mean, but the points you guys are making about you liked the, you know, like that the story seems to be taking off, and especially in the second episode, I like when they find the thing under the guy's
bed.
I do like those things. I'm just not that engaged anymore. So.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel exactly the same way.
And I think that Nana Visitor's exposition at the beginning of the episode of the because I guess we're moving to the second one, the Nana Visitor's exposition there was really good because it gave you all this information. She just like spit out, splewed all this information, but it felt like as soon as it was getting interesting and you were like, okay, what does that mean? What does this mean? Then all of a sudden you had the turncoat guy show up, and then John DeLancey, as much as I love that actor, he was like a wet blanket on the episode. Like,
although, you know, and the thing is with Nana Visitor...
Is that Q?
That's
yes.
Q.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. I do like that guy. But you're right, he doesn't have much to do. But I don't
know. And it was like a Star Trek reunion, too, that whole episode. But the thing with Nana Visitor is that, I mean, she really was like, you know, Basil Exposition's niece. I mean, she was there exactly for the purpose of delivering mountains of exposition.
Right.
And then going and getting killed, or whatever their version of that is. She really functioned in no other way but to just deliver a whole lot of, you know, plot explanation and then disappear. And my feelings were, you know, they spent all this time building up this relationship in the last episode between Jack and Angelo. And then when we finally have them come to see the elderly Angelo, we get absolutely no emotional resolution to that because he's essentially a corpse in a bed.
Right.
He kept on a respirator, and I thought, you know, you had an opportunity to at least have the guy be conscious enough to like wheeze out an explanation to
Jack or squeeze his hand something.
Yeah. And instead, he's unconscious, and they just, you know, have someone deliver this information by proxy, and that just gave no emotional resonance.
Except for, I have to say, when Jack is sitting there awkwardly trying to talk to him, that was pretty good.
That was a nice Jack moment. But,
right,
you know.
And I like that. I thought that was a really good moment. And then what was interesting is like once the, like Jack kisses the guy and the guy immediately dies, and I was like, does that mean Jack has a kiss of death? Like that was what I was wondering that for a while. So I was actually a little disappointed when we got to the thing under the floor, and I was like, really, that's it? Oh, okay. Like I thought
that
would have been more
interesting.
That
bugged me too, because you know Esther also seems to have to function solely as, you know, the resident stupid person, because she only is there to screw things up.
Well,
I mean, Jack, you know, when she comes in and she starts talking about this thing, going, oh, by the way, this thing in the floor, and he's going, uh-uh,
uh-uh,
and he's looking at her like, don't say anything, don't, uh-uh, and she just keeps insisting on opening her mouth at the most inopportune times.
She is obviously not the quickest of Torchwood candidates, which is why I think that if we do go to a new season, I don't want either one of them to be on the team. I think they both fail as Torchwood agents.
For somehow, I don't think Rex is going to survive the series.
I don't either.
No.
But I don't like Esther enough to want her back. So.
Well, if they didn't have her just do stupid stuff all the time.
Oh, constantly, and that's the thing that seems to be her function in the show, is to just constantly be there to say something dumb at the wrong moment.
But then I have to say, at the very end, other than Gwen, because at first I figured, well, they're going to leave and they'll hook up with Gwen, but then she's on the plane, and I was like, oh, really?
The ending of that episode was weird. It was just with Esther driving and Gwen flying, and then the episode.
And then Jack bleeding out in the backseat.
And Jack bleeding out. And
Esther driving around going, I don't know what to do. Oh,
and I was kind of going, this is why Gwen should be driving that car. Because Gwen, at least, she would be upset about Jack bleeding out, but she wouldn't be panicking.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I'm just like, oh my God, come on. How about some first aid? How about that? You know, like...
Might be an idea.
Now, for me, about the highlight of this episode was when we get to back to Oswald after two episodes.
Oh, that was actually pretty good. I liked...
When the prostitute comes in and is a doppelganger for the perky...
Oh, that was so creepy.
For the perky thing. And then she's like, you know, you're going to be declared Category Zero soon.
And he's like, what the heck does that mean? No, but what was great was that when he just wanted to have dinner with her and hang out and not just have sex, the prostitute was like, oh, I don't do that.
Yeah,
she's like, no, no.
I don't want to look at you.
You know, seriously, world's worst prostitute, because don't they do anything if it's for money?
Yeah, pretty much, but she was like, you have reached my limit.
She's got a heart of gold, Allison. It's the hooker with the heart of gold.
But I do like how they revealed what Category Zero was. That's, I think, is kind of interesting.
Oh, yeah.
I think that that's just kind of like anybody that you don't like and you think that they're a bad person, they get declared Category Zero and they can just get burned. And I was like, whoa. And I liked, because that just basically flipped the script on Oswald. Now, because he's like, he was at the top of his game giving these speeches and being like this huge icon, and now they flipped it on him.
Line of the episode, people love me. No. Television likes you.
Yes.
There is a difference.
Yes, that's actually, that was all really good. Like, and then it was great when the blonde guy shows up and is like, yes, your assistant is a covert agent with the CIA. She's like, what? And he's like, turn around and shoot.
Just kills her right now.
That was pretty good. Like, all that was great. And I understand why you guys are a little frustrated with the story, but I feel like this last episode, at least towards the end, picked up enough momentum for me that I'm like I don't feel like I'm just grinding through the last couple. I want to see the next two.
Like, well, let me ask you this.
See, I'm with Peter. I just feel like I'm slogging through this and hoping that it's gonna, you know, at least come to some kind of somewhat satisfying resolution. I feel like I'm trapped watching it to the end. I'm not going to like stop watching, but I'm just waiting it out. You know, I really am not excited about
we're
it.
Marking time.
Go ahead,
yeah,
Peter. Go ahead, Peter.
I'm sorry, I forgot. I got caught up with what Allison was saying. I forgot what I was going to say. If I remember it, I'll tell you.
You were like Livia. Let me ask you this.
Oh, I got it. Thank you. Would you say? Do you think this is on par with the Children of Earth?
No, not even. God, no. Well, Children of Earth was one of the best things I've ever seen on television,
and it was tight.
It was the level of quality of that was better than anything they've done on Doctor Who, better than anything they've done on Torchwood. It was amazing to me. So I totally
So we're all in agreement.
I wasn't expecting it to be as good as Children of Earth. I was like, that was one of those once in a lifetime things that happens that you really can't repeat.
I just wonder how much of it is because Starz wanted it kind of watered down and, you know, for lack of a better effort, dumbed down for American audiences.
It did feel a little dumbed down.
Because it really feels like
I think a lot of it has to do with the fact, I think there's two things at work here. I think one of it is that it's being padded out to death just to fill, you know, 10 episodes because there's so much filler involved. And I also think that I see a lot of RTD just getting up on a soapbox and proselytizing. Mm. And he's got his political issues and he wants to make all of them.
Okay.
And that's getting in the way of telling a story.
I got you.
I would agree.
Okay. Let's wrap that up. Mixed reviews for Torchwood.
But we're still watching.
Next up is Doctor Who, and this was the premiere of the second half of season 6. And what was the name of it?
Let's Kill Hitler.
Brilliant
okay.
title.
But
although it's kind of a red herring.
It is.
Really
yeah, Hitler needs a better PR guy because he didn't get that much airtime.
No, he didn't.
Which is fine with me.
They had so much to do in this episode that they didn't really have time for the Hitler thing.
Right.
But,
although the look on their faces when they realized that they saved Hitler, it's like, oh.
Purely accidental.
Yes. And then I like the fact that he's like, put Hitler in the cupboard. He's like, I'll be putting Hitler in the cupboard. Come on, Adolf. And I was like, what? And he's like, I'm the Fuhrer. He was like, of course you
Shut
are.
So in this episode, we start. Is this what they call is what they did in this episode, is this what retcon is?
Yes! Yes! You've got it in
this
one!
This is retcon.
I'm like, when did Amelia have this friend? But I was fine with it. I was like, all right, whatever, I'll just go with this. But so that's retconning. Right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. See, that kind of, it just bugged me. I loved most of the episode, but the retconning got on my nerves.
Well, I just liked it because it was an excuse to see that young actress, and she's great as Amelia Pond. I just wish she had more to do.
Right. I thought you were going to say the Mel's version. Mel's. She was really pretty.
Oh, no, no, no.
But think how much stronger this would have been if we had seen Mel's before this.
Right, I was thinking that, too. I was like,
you know, as much as you plan out things, if you had planned a little bit better, it would have had much more resonance.
I agree. If we had seen her at the wedding,
yep.
And if we had seen her, you know, when she was growing up.
At some point.
Yeah, so I agree.
Yeah, if they'd mentioned her at some point, it
right.
would have made
absolutely.
More sense.
Absolutely.
She could. You know what? She could have even been, I'm naming my baby Melody after my friend Mel's.
Yeah.
She could have done that like the
anything.
Episode before.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's true. Yeah,
but
you're
this,
right.
This just screamed, I thought of this last Thursday.
Right. Because they did.
But besides that, though, I was happy that Doctor Who was back, and I thought it was a pretty good episode, especially a fun episode for, is it Alex King or Alexis?
Alex Kingston.
Alex Kingston.
Yes. Alex Kingston. It was a really fun episode for her. I mean, she got to have so much fun with being in Nazi Germany and everything. And
she got to be young version of River.
Yeah, young version too. Oh, wait, also, we'll say, I remember, I don't know if you've done this on the podcast, but I could have swore people have asked before if on Doctor Who, if the Doctor could ever be African-American, well, not necessarily American, or if the Doctor could be female. So I guess in this way, they kind of, well, I mean, technically it's not the Doctor, but it is a Time Lord.
Right. So race doesn't matter, basically, they said.
Race,
yes.
Race and gender doesn't matter.
Well, they didn't really say gender doesn't matter because she was always a female.
Yeah.
Right.
But she did change race, you know.
Yes.
So she did.
Which I thought was cool.
Ethnicities were changed during this episode.
Yeah, that was very good because that's why, of course, nobody suspected that that was their daughter. But I like the fact that she basically went and found her parents and grew up with them. I thought that was kind of cool.
Can we just say, smack
cool.
Amy upside the head for not figuring out that Rory was crushing on her the whole time? She's like, you're gay. It's like, no. It's like, and she goes through the whole thing in all the years we've been, and then she, it's like, come on, woman.
Well, that's why I thought that Melody was kind of like, and the penny's in the air, and
the
penny
drops.
You know?
That was the only thing that I haven't seen the premiere of this whole new Matt Smith Doctor Who in a while, but it's weird because I could have swore that she doesn't meet Rory until the whole idea that they've been dating. He's a nurse, right?
Yeah, no, they
yeah.
said
no,
that
no,
they've
no,
known
no, no.
each other.
They've known each other for
yeah.
the whole
yeah,
time.
They've said right. that they've known each other their whole lives.
Okay, all right. Because I was kind of like, really? There was a little Rory? I'm like, I don't remember them being like, but all right. So.
No, they tell you
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, they say they grew up together.
Right.
Yep.
Okay, all right.
And also, they show how small that town is. So.
True.
So they definitely knew each other.
But I thought it was pretty fun. I actually thought even the cheesy, I mean, you know, that's the thing that Doctor Who can get away with. Doctor Who can get away with these kind of like really old school sci-fi silly ideas of, you know, the robots and the little people in the robots.
It's,
I was like, really?
It's
like,
Starship
it was, like,
Dave from
this.
Meet Dave.
I don't know
if there was an Eddie Murphy movie a few years back that nobody saw called Meet Dave, but the original title was Starship Dave.
Oh, and that's right. Yeah.
It's the same exact principle.
Oh, I don't know what you're talking about.
Saw it,
so. But what was really good and actually made my head hurt was the time
paradoxes
that they created or traveled. I was like, wait a minute, what? Because the Doctor and River are supposed to be living their lives opposite, in the opposite order, which means that the first time that the Doctor meets River, or the last time, the last time that the Doctor meets River should be the first time that she meets him, but they skipped that and put that in the middle. And then
you're
she,
making my head hurt.
And then she learns how to pilot, because she always talks about how she learned how to pilot the TARDIS. Apparently, the TARDIS taught her how to fly the TARDIS, and I'm going to assume the TARDIS also taught her Gallifreyan and High Gallifreyan and all that other stuff, because the TARDIS talks directly to her because she's a child of the TARDIS. So I'm like, okay, I think I got that. But then you're like, all right, her entire life growing up, she's heard stories of the Doctor, yet she's been brainwashed and programmed to kill the Doctor. But when she was in the astronaut suit, was she a child when she actually kills the Doctor? Like, what?
We don't know that
yet.
There's supposition to that, but we don't know that for certain.
But if that was true, if she knew she killed the Doctor as a child, then why would she try to kill the Doctor again when she's an adult? I'm confused.
I thought it was interesting.
That's the thing. That's still a question mark. We don't know that.
I thought it was interesting that this was confirmation for the audience. Most of us kind of figured it out that the person Rivers in prison for killing is the Doctor.
Well, they pretty much said that. Yeah. Yes, we know that. But yeah, that, and I like the fact that she stays in the prison when she feels like it. Like, she leaves, and then the prison's like, "Oh, you're coming back." When she comes back, she calls on the phone. It's like, "Yes, River Song checking back into prison," and they're like, "You're here again. All right," and they just bring her back in. And somebody said it's like Hogan's Heroes, because in Hogan's Heroes they used to leave all the time too.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's all pretty good. I still really like that, but the time thing is hurting my head because I'm not quite sure. So the next time we see River, is she going to be the River from the later River, or we're going to see the early River again? Because the early River is only supposed to be interacting with the later Doctor. So I don't. They messed up their own established timeline, basically. And so now I'm confused, because I need to know which River we're dealing with when we deal with River.
Well, this was Assassin River, who doesn't know she's River.
Right. But the next time we see River, which River is it going to be?
Hopefully it'll be our River.
Right.
Also, I'm just curious, like, because I haven't seen Doctor Who from the 60s and 70s like other people on the podcast, but is this the first time in the history of the show that they have given the death of the Doctor a date? Like, this is when he dies.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen everything. But as far as I know, yeah.
Because they've never given the Doctor a definitive, absolute date.
And also, we know he's not actually going to stay dead. We're pretty sure.
Well, no, but he could.
He's going to find some way to squirrel his way out.
Well, no, wait. I thought that he could do it that way because I thought in the premiere of this season, he's like 1,100 years old. But then the Doctor that we're hanging out with is only 900. So technically, you've got around 200 years.
Yeah, but the problem with that is that's the same actor.
It's the same actor.
I know. I thought that too. I was like, well, unless somehow he regenerates into looking like the Matt Smith version again.
No. They're going to figure out a way.
I figure
by the end of the season, we're going to be back on that beach, so that we can see how that happened. So I don't. They're not going to leave that.
I mean, I've already got theories on what it was we saw.
Right.
Based on stuff that happened this last season.
And also, as far as we know, the Doctor's been away from Amy and Rory for big chunks of time, so he could have already aged another 100 years.
Exactly.
Oh, that's true.
I think Moffat has already dropped various hints throughout the season, you know, showing where he's going as far as that's concerned. I think he's all, you know, this last thing about, you know, Riversong being raised, you know, not, or being rather a contemporary of her own parents, I think, you know, that was something that he just tossed in at the last minute. But I think things like figuring out how he was going to kill the Doctor on the beach, that's something he constructed very carefully.
Right.
And I think he's been dropping hints as far as that's concerned all season long.
Yeah, so there's an out clause.
Yes.
I couldn't figure out, like, when he died from the poison, or he was dying from the poison, I was like, well, the only thing that can save him is that River's regenerating, and we know that a Time Lord who is in the middle of their regeneration cycle can use that energy. They have extra energy to give. I didn't figure out that she was going to use all her regeneration, because I was like, that was a little excessive. You didn't need to do all that. Like, all she needed was to give up one regeneration to bring him back. But probably she didn't quite know how to do that. Well, and that explains how she can die later. So they had to get rid of all her regenerations to allow her to die in the library, pretty much.
The way that she went out, I mean, the reason that she put herself in that place is because it would have been totally fatal to the Doctor too. He would not have been able to regenerate from that either.
Right. So, but still, I guess they wanted to. So now, if she almost dies later on, she's really in danger.
Yeah.
Except that we've seen her death already, so that's kind of confusing. Which makes it actually, I actually don't want to watch the library episode again because I love River Sounds now.
You know, yeah. Actually, I forgot about that.
You forgot?
I totally forgot.
Yes, she dies. It's very sad.
How does she die?
She sacrifices herself for the doctor
to save everybody else.
Yeah.
She hooks herself up to this machine where she gets a massive dose of massively electrocuted.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, not coming back from that.
Yeah.
But overall, I'm happy the Doctor's back. You know, I like the show, so.
Yeah, it was a very good episode. I think it was very strong.
I thought it was interesting when the Doctor has to tell Amy and Rory that you've got to let your daughter.
You have to let your daughter go.
Go.
Well, she's grown now.
Yeah.
And they're like, you did raise her, you just didn't know you were raising her, which is really hurts my head. And as brand new parents for them, that they just had a baby, and to know that they've already raised that baby, and the baby's now a grown woman, and you have to let her go, and you just had her like 6 months ago, like what? You know, like that really, that hurts my head, let alone what it does to...
That's what happens if you raise a baby with a time head.
With a time lord.
No, remember that women, it could have
a... You could have a time head, right.
What's a time head?
All right, so let's wrap this up. Good podcast, good discussion. If you guys have any feedback, give it to us at tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, and we're on Facebook. And you can now listen to us on getthepointradio.com. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Later.